Welcome to another episode of the Politatine Podcast. You are currently listening to the one-hour segment of our podcast. To listen and watch the full conversation, head over to politatine.com and click the Watch tab in the top right. If that's not your thing, we appreciate you and hope that you enjoy the episode. And we're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politatine. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathala. I'm the co-host of the Politatine podcast, back for our, I believe it's our fifth episode of season number two on Politatine, if I'm not mistaken. But it's a long time coming. We've been off for just a little under 1 week now, so we're coming into a flow here. And we're talking today about a couple of things. Number one, vaccine distribution. We're into a really good stage right now in vaccine distribution. Around 29% of the country has received their first dose of one of the three vaccines. I know Damien got his yesterday, and I'm getting mine tomorrow around the afternoon. And so I think it's been a great process. We began the podcast, in June, talking about get your masks on. Now we're saying get your vaccines, get them from a store near you. And so I think it's a great transformation that we've made, not only as a nation, but as a podcast. We began this thing talking about mitigating the effects. Now we're talking about reaching herd immunity, which is a great new step, milestone for our nation and our situation right now. How was your vaccine appointment yesterday, Damien?
Yeah, I drove about an hour to get my vaccine. I had it scheduled because I'm leaving out of state in a couple of days, and I just want to be as safe as possible. So I got my vaccine. I think last Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, Governor Kemp opened it up to everyone. So everyone 16 and older can get vaccines now. I decided to get my vaccine yesterday before I headed out of state, and I got it actually before I head out of state. And I got it actually at the same time as one of our friends, one of our mutual friends, who works here on the show. And, I remember he was telling me my arm's really hurting. My arm's really hurting. I can't feel my arm. I have not felt anything. I can lift up my arm fully. This is the arm I got on my left arm. I can lift up my arm fully. I got it right here. I can feel where it's tender a little bit. If you're watching this visual or just from the audio, go check it out on YouTube. You can see exactly what I'm talking about. But if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see what I'm demonstrating here. I can lift up my arm fully. I got the shot right here. You don't feel anything when you get it. How usually the doctor's it's just going to feel like an ant bite. It's just going to feel like a little sting. Nothing. You don't feel anything. Right now, all I feel is tender. That's it. It doesn't hurt. Honestly, my right arm is more sore. I got it. So I decided to work out my traps the day before I got my vaccine. Like an idiot. And so I was really sore when I went to go get my shot. I'm honestly in more pain from being sore than I am from the shot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's great. I did hear from my mom that the second dose was the more hurtful one for her, at least. And so I think it just depends on who you are, your natural immunities. We talk about just getting the vaccine, getting your masks on, whatever you can do to get a vaccine near you is not only good for you, but also good for the nation, because we can't get through this virus unless we have herd immunity, which is made by having over 50% of the population vaccinated. The faster we can get there, the better it is for our nation. So go out, get your vaccine. I found an appointment by a chance of God tomorrow at 4:30. And that was done within 1 hour of me searching nearby. So it's not hard. It does take dedication to find your vaccine location. And especially if you're like me and Damien going out of town during spring break, that's what we have seen rises in COVID-19 cases through. We're seeing rises in COVID-19 cases in Florida right now because of vacations, because of increased tourism. Do your part. If you're going out of state, if you're going to visit family members or going to, for example, Disneyland, get your vaccine beforehand and then do it. It's a safer thing for yourself, a safer thing for our nation, and it is beneficial. So as our message, now it's go get the vaccine and keep wearing your masks. That too.
Yeah,
and let's talk about something that kind of makes up the cover of the podcast today, or should have at least. We'll talk about that. But it is Lil Nas X, a musician that's been controversial lately. The maker of the Old Town Road song that became popular, I believe, last year. He had a music video on a song. I forget what the name is of that song, like Montero or something.
Yeah, I think so.
The video. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that that's what it's called, Montero.
Yeah. And the video received criticism and praise and mixed reviews because of how expressive it was. You know, we know that Lil Nas X is a homosexual, a gay individual, a part of our LGBTQIA plus community. And he made the video, I think, more than just being a regular old ass music video, also representation of what he feels on some kind of a daily basis. The fact that he, you know, pulled ads to hell, being a representation of how a lot of people think that every single gay person, it will be going to hell. And they wouldn't be accepted into the gates of heaven, which is a Christian idea. And I think that for many people, obviously, I think that this is something that goes beyond him making an amusing music video, but it goes into him expressing what things he feels on a daily basis. Because people really do believe that if you are gay, you cannot go to heaven. That's a reality. And make fun of him all you want for, you know, lap dancing Satan and killing Satan. All these things are bizarre for us, but for him, it's his daydreams. Right? It is what he experiences and has to go through as a gay individual. And I think that cannot be understated.
I think that this is honestly like one of the most hilarious situations. I think that there's a depth to it as well. Like, obviously, for people that are just kind of like, you know, listening to the podcast, to listen to the podcast and to listen to like our general takes on things, they really, you know, they might not understand kind of why this is a big issue for conservatives. But what happens during this time period, usually during Democratic presidencies, you see conservatives kind of whining about like culture war issues. Last week it was Cardi B twerking. Like, I don't know, we moved from Cardi B twerking to Lil Nas X and his Satan shoes and lap dancing.
Right.
I think that the problem beyond anything is like, conservatives can't accept that it's like a gay black man doing it too. Like, it's already bad enough that he's gay, and it's already bad enough that he's black. Now you get both things, and now it's like a gay black man selling shoes with human blood in them that you know, are satanic or whatever. I think that it's honestly really hilarious. And the funnier thing to me is like the snowflake idea that like conservatives had. They're like, oh my God, the left is full of snowflakes. And then they're like crying, they're like, no, all our children are gonna worship Satan now because a gay black guy that sings Old Town Road is lap dancing on Satan. I think it's just I think it's like a funny situation. I don't know. I saw this old guy talking about it, and he was like, just don't buy the shoes. It's like, if it really bothers you, just don't buy the shoes. And only 666 pairs were made. I wonder why he chose that number. Very random number. So it's not even like they're being mass produced or anything by Nike. What
I
was
don't think
another
Nike
thing?
produces them. I think
No,
it
no, no,
was,
they're not.
yeah,
No, they're
Mischief
customs.
and him. Yeah, customs. Because they have human blood in them. That's why Nike would never produce shoes with human
Allegedly.
blood in them.
Allegedly. Allegedly. Yeah. And then the other thing, did you see the tweet sequence that he had with Candace Owens? I thought, or not Candace Owens, with,
Christy Noem.
well, he had another one with Caitlyn Bennett. I guess this is
Who's
more of like
Caitlyn
a,
Bennett?
do you know who Caitlyn Bennett is?
Is she a commentator on the right?
She's like, oh, this is really funny. I react to her a lot on my stream. She's known for pooping her pants at a frat party. Like, this is it, people that actually like know about like the political culture, what's it called, like streaming culture and stuff, will definitely know what I'm talking about. But yeah, she's like a political commentator. She works for the Liberty Hangout. She used to do the show with Alex Jones. What's
Oh
it called?
wow, okay. She's like
InfoWars.
that. She's
Yeah,
like that,
yeah,
right? Okay,
yeah, yeah. Well,
gotcha.
she's
Gotcha.
libertarian, but so is Ben
Nah,
Shapiro.
that's what every
So,
single far right
yeah,
conspiracy theorist is.
exactly. So yeah, so she got in like a Twitter battle with him, and she was, I don't even remember. Let me pull up the tweets, but it was so funny. What was the other one that you were talking to me about?
Christy Noem, the governor of
Okay.
South Dakota.
Yeah,
And
I
she
saw
had this
that too.
conversation with Lil Nas, you know, off of a thing, and she was like citing out Bible phrases, talking about how, you know, I forget what it was, but just about how unholy both the song and the shoes that he had made for the most part were. And I think it's like a pattern we're seeing with like anything that's untraditional is blasted by conservatives, whether it's being gay, whether it's being somebody who's, you know, different in their viewpoints, having different colored hair. These things are seen as sins by conservatives. And sure, it's different, and for some it may be offensive, but it still is somebody's own freedom of expression. That's what we hold in this nation. And if we're to curtail that freedom of expression, who are we as a democracy, right? I think it's one of the things that holds us together, the fact that we are able to accept and stand by and listen to these things that we may not agree with. And as a governor of a state in this nation, she should know First of all, the Constitution, what it protects in this nation, and also be able to accept people who are a little bit different than who she is. It's not going to change her state. It's not going to corrupt the minds of her children. It is simply a music video for a song that you can choose to watch or not choose to watch. We have the freedom of choice as much as he has the freedom to express himself in whichever way he chooses to. There's no difference. So that's what I think we should come back to, because this is a pattern we're seeing in continuous things with conservatives and people who are just untraditional. And I don't think it's okay.
Yeah. And then another thing that has to be taken into consideration. So I saw Joyner Lucas, another artist. I know that you're familiar with Joyner Lucas. He was also tweeting at Lil Nas X, basically saying that, like, the problem with this song is the fact that, like, Lil Nas X also produced Old Town Road, which is like the children's song anthem. And Lil Nas X responds to him. He's like, "Are you okay? Like, I rap about lean and like having sex in that song. Like, this song, like, neither one of these songs are made for kids." And like, that's something that I feel like also people stray away from. But I actually found the tweets from Lil Nas X.
But this guy gets made fun of. Like, this artist gets made fun of by continuous people for being gay. And it's homophobia on his page continuously that I see being a bystander. And it's just not okay, because we talk about how governors are going against him for posting something that is expressing himself and maybe not traditional. But people are literally discriminating against him as an artist for being gay. And that's also an issue we should deal with in this nation. And once again, the idea that he is like held to some standard because he produced Old Town Road is just a fallacy once again, because he is an independent artist. He doesn't owe anything to anybody.
Yeah.
Right? It is his choice at the very end of the day.
And the problem with the governor doing it too is, like, I saw the tweets that you were talking about. I just forgot her name, and I'm terrible with names. But like, she was tweeting like a bunch of religious stuff, and she was like, "This goes against, like, dude, no one cares about your religion." It's like the same people that are like, "It's the Second Amendment, right? It's in the Constitution. Read the Constitution." It's like, you know, they haven't read the Constitution, because they are always talking about God and like Jesus. And they're like, God and Jesus needs to be a system of, like, needs to be in our government, and like needs to be, it has to, just has to be in our government. It's like, that's literally also part of the First Amendment. Like, the fact that no, he or she does not, like, no, God needs to be as part of our government. But I found the tweets, and they're a little bit explicit. So I might just read them, because they're really funny. But like, that's the warning for anyone that might have like some sort
of
sense.
I'll try and censor them. Try and censor them.
There you go. But okay, so Caitlin Bennett tweets, "It's weeks like these I'm so thankful to be blocked by Lil Nas X." And Lil Nas X, if you block someone on Twitter, you can still see their tweets, but they can't see yours. Lil Nas X responds, "I still see your tweets, shitty pants." And obviously referencing the fact that she pooped herself at a frat party. And then Caitlin Bennett, this is actually, I found this really surprising, and this is something that like made me stop laughing at the Twitter thread. Caitlin Bennett responds with, "Do you still see your dad? ? Obviously, like, the black stereotype being referenced there, that he doesn't have a dad because he's black.
Serious racism.
Yeah. No. It was
serious discrimination.
It was serious racism. Yeah. And that's not the first time she does it. Like, she does it on her like Liberty Hangout like YouTube videos that I react to on stream too. It basically, she does this, and she does it all the time. It's the funniest thing. Like, obviously what she's saying isn't funny. And I say this about Alex Jones too. If we could just appreciate them being entertainers and like not see them as political commentators, they would be the funniest people on earth. Like, if these people were just comedians, they're hilarious. But no, she was like arguing with this girl on the beach the other day, and like, she was brown, and like, she was like, so you're poor because you're black. And like, it wasn't even what they were talking about. They were talking about like vaccines or something, or they were talking about trans rights. And she was like, so you're poor. You probably don't know how to Google things because you're black. And I was like,
a real political commentator.
Yeah. No. And okay, like, not only a real political commentator, like, she's on Fox News. Like, Caitlin Bennett's like big. Like, she's like, she's not as big as Charlie. No, she's as big as Charlie Kirk, I'd say.
Wow.
Yeah, she's
that
as big as Charlie Kirk.
That I haven't heard, because that's like discrimination at the highest degree.
Yeah. And Lil Nas X, Lil Nas X responds with, "Yep, and I might have sex with yours," saying actually something a little bit more explicit than that. And then she does this. She does this, which I just found really funny. She says, "Lil Nas X or Lil Nas just threatened to rape my dad. Sounds about what I'd expect." And it's just like this whole situation went from like satanic shoes.
Yeah.
To like Caitlyn Bennett crying, Boo Boo Bennett, as she's like referred to as literally everywhere. Boo Boo Bennett crying about Lil Nas X. Like, I don't understand it.
From a guy who's like getting, you know, discriminated against on Twitter.
He's hilarious, like, what do you expect? Though. He's so funny.
Saying, yeah, he's extremely so funny. Because he like he's very funny because of his comebacks to what people say against him. He takes it and he spins it on them, which is insane. And it happens a lot because a lot of times he is discriminated against, whether it's because he's black or because he's gay. People don't like him for who he is. And so he has to have this kind of, a public face and has to come back against these critiques and critics of his persona, not even his music, his persona, because he is so expressive, right? And untraditional.
Yeah.
But on to more pressing things.
The shoes are fire, though.
The shoes are—they're pretty cool.
The shoes are pretty badass.
One thing I'm iffy about. The one thing I'm iffy about is the fact that they have actual human blood in the.
Do you think they actually do though?
It's like a little prick of human blood. Not
you think
like a
so?
Whole.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard
it was
it's
in
a little bit.
The bubble, the air bubble, at the bottom of the shoe.
Yeah, that's where it is.
Drop.
Yeah, yeah,
so
that's
it, like goes
it's
through
a
the whole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know, but they look fire. Like, would that stop you from buying them? Obviously, there's only 166 pairs, or there's only 666 pairs. It's not like he's gonna send like two pairs to us. But like, if you got sent a pair, would you give it away because of the human blood?
Well, I would sell them first because they're worth a lot more than.
Yeah. You would sell them, dude. I would keep them. I would so keep them. They're so fire.
It's kind of weird for me having like wearing around human blood.
Yeah.
Like,
I guess it depends who it's
obviously
from.
It's like depends on who you are.
I guess obviously. It well also who's the blood from, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's like somebody else's blood,
like no, like if we can trace it back, you know how GOAT sends you like a certificate like of authenticity? They need to send us like a certificate of whose blood it is.
Yeah, I wear your blood on my shoes every day. Hope you have
your birthday. Yeah, it's like when you get a heart transplant and like their mom comes to, you know what I'm talking about, like the person that deceased, like their mom. It's kind of the same situation. It's I'm wearing this person's blood in my shoes.
I think they're also like $1,000 for the retail price of the shoes, and they'll go up to like a lot after it's like priced up with reselling, etc.
They must be more now.
After reselling, obviously. Yeah. And then there's like a heaven version with like a cross on it and all the white stuff. That's also worth a lot of money too. That's like the opposite side of what he had made.
Oh, Nike sued them.
I don't know if Lil Nas X made that one. What?
Nike sued them too.
I think they are suing them because they're taking the shoes that they made and selling them for more. Without doing much to him, except for like putting in more blood something.
I don't know. They won't win the lawsuit though. I think they won't win the lawsuit because they have like the creative rights over it. It's exactly what you're talking about. They're just trying to be like, we're not associated with this.
Right.
But what else?
It's going to help them regardless.
Yeah, exactly.
Saying we're not going to stand for whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other thing was like everyone was saying like, oh, like this is satanic propaganda. Right. And like, at the end of the music video, he kills Satan, doesn't he?
Yeah, he kills Satan.
Yeah, so why aren't the conservatives like, yeah, we love this music video. Lil Nas X kills Satan.
It's weird because he also lap dances Satan and like pole dances to hell.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's a lot of things going on. You can't really interpret the video. Like, we can't interpret what he's thinking. Obviously, we can try all we want, but it's hard to say exactly what Lil Nas X was thinking when he was making the video. Satan at the end of the video, but he becomes Satan. That's the thing.
Oh, okay.
Like, he takes his horns, puts them on his head, and like becomes Satan.
Oh,
which
okay.
is even worse than
Yeah.
That's what the problem is.
Yeah. But he learned to pole dance for that for the whole music video.
Really?
That was cool. Yeah, he was uploading like videos of him learning to pole dance in like January and whatnot. What was the other thing? Oh, do you think like some like conservatives, because with all this conversation that's been happening, there's been also a big conversation about Hillsong, you know, the church a lot of celebrities go to. There's been a lot of conversation about gay conversion therapy and about like a Hillsong and how Hillsong was in favor of conversion therapy. You think like a conservative watching that music video, like that was their like moment, like where they realized that like they're gay? Because there has to be, with the amount of people that watch that, there has to be one person that was like, damn, dude, that was kind of hot.
Yeah, I mean, I could never think, like, in their minds, because I'm not, we're not, we're straight males.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't be able to think about that, but there sure could be a chance. And so many people are scared to say that they're gay. I know friends, people who come on this podcast in the past, who are afraid to say that they're bisexual or gay or lesbian because their parents wouldn't accept them.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just so hard because you can't express your own identity to the people who birthed you.
Yeah.
I can't believe how tough that would be. And people, I think that people are just, they have this idea that they're like ultra straight males. Like they want to, it's a TikTok trend right now, ultra straight, you know,
super straight
male.
Yeah, super
straight.
That's
what it is. Super straight males. And I think it's like saying you're like excessively anti-gay. Like super straight means anti-gay, essentially. And it's like a weird thing because why would you gain pleasure and popularity off of like discriminating against people? You must be a really sorry person. And I'm like not usually this rude, but you have to be really sorry and really like down bad to have to berate people who are different than you to gain popularity and a good feeling about yourself. And it's the same thing that like, you know, they use for white sharecroppers when they were allying against black people in the beginning of, you know, the beginning of the Shays Rebellion. Right. They use the idea of white supremacy to say you're better than these black people. Let's discriminate against them to make them feel better. Right.
Yeah.
It's the same idea because you're telling people that they're better than gay people because they're straight. It's completely unsubstantiated because you can't control that. It doesn't affect who you are at the very end of the day. It's simply a sexual preference. It doesn't affect your grades, doesn't affect who you go on to become. It's not some kind of a mental deficiency. And I've heard so many people talking about how it is something that debilitates you. It is a genetic modification that is different than what we have. Why does it matter? Why does it matter? Because we should be able to accept everybody.
Yeah.
And I think the people who should be berated and in some senses told their place are people who discriminate against gay Americans and minorities for being simply who they are on a different note. I want to talk about minorities and policing because we had a situation unfold. I think a couple of days ago, the trial of Derek Chauvin began.
Yeah.
And this is the man that killed George Floyd by kneeling on him for, I believe it was
9 minutes and 20 seconds.
Yeah.
That's what the new,
I believe.
Yeah. Because we used to think, what was it? Before we used to think it was 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
You're right, right.
But apparently during the case, new footage came out and showed that it was 9 minutes and 26 seconds.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, that trial was happening as of a couple of days ago. And a thing to remember is that we began this podcast in June of last year because of the shooting of George Floyd. Mm-hmm. We came together on like, you know, the day after and said, we have to be doing this. We've been talking about making a podcast since like the school year. But that was like our spark saying that like there needs to be more conversation between teens in our area and around the state about issues that they really care about.
Yeah.
And that was our inciting factor. And so we're back here talking not about the death of George Floyd as much, but now about the trial of who killed him. And it's been a painful couple of days. Your thoughts on the situation?
Yeah. I think that this is going to be a very hard case for the prosecution to prove, for the defense to defend against. I guess you don't really have to prove anything as a defense, but the problem is that in Minnesota where this happened, the kneeling doesn't have to be the primary cause of death; it just has to be a key factor for it. And what the defense is arguing, if anyone listened to the defense's opening statement, is that that it was actually other factors such as the fentanyl and health complications, that drug use and health complications that Mr. Floyd had that actually led to his death, not, you know, Derek Chauvin's actions explicitly. They're going to have a very hard time proving that, which in this case, you have to prove that because you're making an allegation. Because it doesn't have to be the prosecution doesn't have to prove that Derek Chauvin's actions were what directly resulted in George Floyd's death, which we know it, like, come
right,
on.
Right.
We know that that's what happened. But let's say hypothetically that fentanyl and health conditions, pre-existing conditions were at play in his death. We know that even with those pre-existing conditions that the kneeling was one of the lead factors in his death, if not the lead factor that brought out those pre-existing conditions. It's like making a kid with asthma run for 40, 50 minutes at full speed, and then when he dies, you're like, well, technically, I didn't kill him, the asthma did. Or it literally in this situation, like kneeling on someone with asthma's neck for 9 minutes and then being like, whoops, guess he shouldn't have had asthma. So,
It's almost like our mock trial case, Damien,
yeah.
where, and this is me arguing for your side,
Yeah.
kind of. It's like when I was a defense in a case that we had for mock trial, in which I was arguing that a kid who died from vaping and from popcorn lung would have died anyways because of his asthma, and
Yeah.
that asthma was one of the main factors, and that's why vaping should not be considered. Now, in our situation, vaping aggravated the asthma, and that's why he died. In this situation, I think the same principle upholds to a degree.
Yeah.
The fact that kneeling on somebody's, neck for that long would have aggravated his existing conditions and fentanyl overdose, and really it would have been a contributing factor. And so
Yeah.
it shouldn't be taken out of the equation, because at the end of the day, Chauvin was breaking protocol, and bystanders were trying to help. They were kept out of the scene. And the weirdest thing to me during the trial was that three of the witnesses called to the stand, three of them said they had called 911 on the police officers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, did I read that right? Like, they called 911 on police officers during the situation. And it goes to show just how helpless the people are when the people who are meant to protect citizens are abusing the power. And it
Yeah.
happens so often, but we're left helpless. There is no authority to go call, because when you think about crime, we call the police. When the peacekeepers themselves or peacekeepers are committing crimes, that's where the issue arises. And it happens way too often. I mean, in our driver's ed course that me and Damien took, we didn't really focus on as much. And if you're watching this, Georgia Department of Driver Services, we were attentive in the course. But I was
Allegedly,
allegedly, we make
we weren't
sure we
paying
keep our
attention that
licenses.
much. Yeah, right? Too late.
Yeah. So
They already gave
you
them to
gotta put
us.
that
Yep.
law. But anyways, I was looking at this one module in the course, and it was talking about how if you're part of the African American community or the minority community, you have to pay more attention and ask your parents about how to interact with a police officer when you're pulled over, or if you're pulled over. And so I think that when I saw that, I was like, how can this be any more institutionalized when a course that we are mandated to take as drivers is telling us to watch our backs as minorities when a police officer is pulling us over? They know what's happening. It's pretty obvious. So why is it our responsibility to cut back on that, as opposed to them doing it themselves? They know it's happening, so why not stop it? It continues to happen, and it becomes our responsibility as citizens to stop it. And the
Yeah.
whole Blue Lives Matter argument, and I'm going on a tangent here, I'll stop in a
No,
minute.
no, no, don't worry about it.
But the whole Blue Lives Matter argument, we talk a lot about how it is the job that they choose, and how, with Black Lives Matter, it's your race that makes you privy to these consequences. The problem is, race is becoming a job in and of itself now. Because for African Americans and minorities, they have to be put through taxing conditions, have to be put through extra measures at the, at police stops, traffic stops, and be after being pulled over. It is becoming a job in and of itself. That's the problem. With Blue Lives Matter, it's a job that you choose. With Black Lives Matter, your birth becomes a job. And
Yeah.
that's the issue.
Yeah. 1,000%. And you talked about the police being called on the police. The first witness mentioned that the 911 operator. She goes on and says that she called a superior. And was like, "Is everything okay here? Like, the situation's bad." She said something that gave me chills. Like, I literally have chills. I don't know if the camera can pick them up, but I literally, like, I got chills right now. Okay, you can't see them, but literally thinking about what she said. She starts the call by saying, literally on the recorded call, we heard it in court. She goes, "Hey, I don't mean to be a snitch, but," like, how much more can this culture of police protect police, us versus them, could that statement be? "I don't mean to be a snitch." You're not being a snitch when you're seeing a man being murdered. When me, you call the police because our car got stolen. It's not, "Hey, you don't call 911." It's like, "Hey, 911, are you being a snitch? Where, like, what's your location?" Like, that's not how That's not how they answer the phone. Because when something is wrong, it's wrong. And we know that. But police officers are so ingrained mentally to not snitch on each other, to not report when something is wrong. That's why ACAB is a thing. That's why I fully believe that this is an institution that is wrong and that every single cop is a part of it. And it's not just the cops now. Now we know it's the 911 operators because they're scared to snitch too. So even when you do have a good cop, because they say not all cops are bad cops, they're a bad cop. Because if they are to speak out against it, they get fired. You know, they always face consequences. So there's no benefit for them snitching. So while they might be a good cop because, you know, they pulled over the black guy and didn't even give him a ticket. They just gave him a warning. It's like, hey, like, you know what? Hey, man, have a nice day. There's cops like that all the time. But if that cop is patrolling with an officer and that officer rips a black man out of his car in front of his children and beats him for no reason, I can guarantee you that good cop isn't going to go report that. Because if he does, he's going to get fired. And it's not the good cop's fault. It's the system's fault that has perpetuated this kind of us versus them mentality. And a big part of it has been gun control. As a matter of fact, something that we didn't get to talk about was literally a week. We come on the podcast and we're like, hey, let's talk about this mass shooting. A week doesn't go by and it's another mass shooting in Colorado, in Boulder.
Colorado.
And a police officer died there. I hate police officers. I hate the system of police officers. That man did not deserve to die. That man shouldn't have died. No police officer deserves to die. And if we want to talk about a solution to this problem, we need to realize as Americans that we have fetishized. Literally, we have a gun fetish. We have a gun fetish. And it's crazy how something written over 200 years ago with weapons that are not near the weapons that we have today has killed so many people. Because pen was brought to paper and not directly, you know, written in modern English, people are still dying today. And I think, you know, what really hurts me and what has really hurt is that this isn't like a black and white issue. Like, you know, we're talking about like police pulling over black people. And so the police are scared. So they shoot the black people. The problem is that we're now seeing that this industry of weapon production and of weapons, they don't care if you're black or white. And once Sandy Hook happened, and obviously we were a lot younger, Sandy Hook, but I've been looking at it again. And obviously with the anniversary of Sandy Hook that recently passed, I looked at it again. They shot kids and we didn't get any gun reform. They killed first graders. And the NRA and these gun producers, manufacturers are so powerful in lobbying we didn't get any gun reform. And not only did they kill kids, they shot white kids. They went in and shot white kids in a wealthy neighborhood. And I think that Smith & Wesson could give some white guy a gun, and that white guy could literally go into a house, $1 million house full of white kids and a teenage girl that's babysitting them, kill them all, and Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz will be like, well, that's why the babysitter should have had a gun. That's why all of the babies there should have had guns. We need to train babies to be part of a well-regulated militia.
And they said teachers should have guns when Sandy Hook happened.
They said they said pre-K, like I'm not kidding. This isn't a joke. I know that this sounds like really funny. There's literally a clip of congressmen, like Republican congressmen, saying that preschoolers should be trained on how to use guns and that they should have guns in preschool. Like I'm not kidding. Like this isn't a satirical clip.
Yeah. I can't conceive how they can believe in things like this. The only thing I can kind of see is how political lobbying and political interests of things like the NRA. It's political suicide then, when you're supported by these organizations, to say that you support gun control measures. Mm-hmm. It's political suicide.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's like, even our legislators are so tied down by corporate interests to where, even if they believe in something, like, how can you look at your children in the eye and say, I didn't support your futures, I want to give you a gun, if you're in school and you could be potentially killed by a shooting? And I was in class today and I was thinking about the thing because I was taking a test and there was a loud noise outside of my classroom and my teacher was like scared. Yeah. Right. I don't know if she was scared because of it. It may have been like some kind of a intruder, but I was scared because it could have been somebody who was in our school illegally holding a weapon, like a gun, a shooter in our school, an active shooter. And I was like, the fact that I even thought of that as my first response to hearing a loud noise outside of my room, that could have been anything, is just alarming, because I know every single other child in our school system may be going through the exact same thing as me. The
yeah.
system itself is just so flawed against the children who will be our next congressman, next congresswoman. I hope that we have the pre-cares who went through the situation, people like us, you and I, who've been going through these threats to our schools and our systems, that we remember, you know, how much of a pain that it was for us to be in the situation and go up and grow up to be congressmen and congresswomen who support real gun control measures, because it's bound to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that it's hard to understand why a simple background check and a simple, you know, ban of certain assault rifles is so hard to conceive, because we have shotguns. I know you shoot guns all the time.
Yeah.
We still believe in these things because we believe that people who are mentally disabled, people who should be owning a gun, shouldn't be able to get their hands on a gun without a holding period, without
yeah.
background checks, and without these things that stop people who have malintentions from getting their hands on a gun. It's simple things. That's all that I'm asking for.
Well, the thing is, guns, listen, guns, they're not going to, an AR-15 is not going to defend you against a home intruder, dog. Like, I don't know what you want me to tell you. Okay. Like, there's no like gap, right? There's no like level where you're like, I need an AR-15, because if a home intruder comes in and you use an AR-15, you might end up like unintentionally hurting yourself because of the fact that this gun can literally shoot through walls. Okay, and you don't need an AR-15 to defend yourselves against a home intruder. You don't need one to defend yourself against four home intruders. Okay, so let's say worst case scenario, right? Like 12 dudes break into your house. You have a gun. You have an AR-15, let's say. It doesn't make it, like, you can defend yourself with a handgun. Like, you don't need, okay?
Right, right.
Then the next argument is, well, what if the government, what if the tyrannical Joe Biden government decides to come for my property, like I need to defend. You think you're going to defend yourself against the United States government with an AR-15 with a bump stock on it? I'll give you a bump stock. We can 3D print one. We can put it on your gun. I'll give you a drum magazine. You can use it. Like you can have all the attachments you want. They're not going to send in soldiers. They're going to send a drone to your house, dude. Like, they don't care about, like, first of all, I hope you realize that the military industrial complex literally makes it to where, like, these young men's lives, like, they don't care. They'll send in like 40, and if you kill all 40, they'll send in another 40. Okay, so your AR-15 isn't going to stop them. It doesn't matter how much ammo you have, because unless you have 2 million bullets, which is the size of the United States military, and if they want your property, they're getting it. Okay, so you're not defending anything. Guns are meant to be, at this point, a self-defense tool when they're small weapons, when they're handguns, and a hobby when they're assault rifles. When they're semi-automatic assault rifles, they're meant to be a hobby. They're cool. When they're sniper rifles, you don't need a sniper rifle. And if you need an AR-15 to hunt, you're bad at hunting, you should get a new hobby. So the thing is, again, these are meant to be hobbies. If you know what else is a hobby of mine? Like jewelry. Jewelry. I like wearing jewelry. I have jewelry. If someone went, hey, your jewelry just killed 15 people in Boulder and literally killed 8 people the other day in Atlanta, I'd be like, hey, you know what? Maybe this hobby isn't such a good thing. Like, maybe I can, like, not partake in this hobby in order for people not to die. But we have fetishized guns. Like, it's crazy.
And it could be certain types of jewelry that are causing deaths, for example.
Yeah.
And you could get rid of that jewelry.
Yeah.
Like it's not even like getting rid of all guns that Better or Work was saying.
Or we
like
could.
Presidential debates. You could. But
We could.
the bigger thing right now, I think that we have to deal with is that if we prohibit guns, there's going to be black markets. Even if we prohibit AR-15s from being sold, there's going to be black markets that are going to sell these products for just as much. Talk about the prohibition movement, the temperance movement, in the 1900s, right? Women actively worked to prohibit alcohol from their husbands getting their hands on it because it was causing social issues. But they still got their hands on alcohol through black market sales. It's going to happen. I think that the biggest thing we have to do, and the most immediate thing we have to do, is by increasing background checks and the time needed to get a gun and like go from like buying a gun to getting the gun in the mail or something, right? Holding periods. I think those two are the most imminent things that we need to do to stop this barrage of just gun shooting incidents in this nation. It goes beyond banning guns. It goes into making sure guns get in the hands of lawful and mentally fit gun owners. It's a simple thing. It's something that we have neglected for way too long, and we have to support it. And you know, it beyond that, I think that the problem is, I was talking about how I want our kids who have to go through the same situations. You know, our school, for instance, I'm not going to name the school itself, but we had an active shooter incident last year. I don't know if you know this, Damien, but we had a person with a concealed carry permit come onto our school property during our PSAT day, in which we had 50 or so students outside manning drones, and he walked outside of there. He had a gun in his backpack. And it was scary to me because I noticed it, and I noticed the fact that 50 students were within a 500 feet radius of this man who had a gun in his backpack outside. He could have easily decimated every single one of them. My friends, my peers, my classmates. That is something that happened to me, and I will never forget it. I don't think anybody who was outside that day will ever forget it. I have to believe that our generation will come out of this knowing how much we need active gun control measures to stop situations like what happened at our school. And that's what I have hope for. But in terms of what Derek Chauvin, the trial, what's happening with that, I remember a music video and a song that I was very fond of. And it was one by Lil Baby. It was The Bigger Picture. He talks about how I focus on the mind and heart and not the color of people's skins or their status as peacemakers, police officers. It's about the mind and heart. I think that it's different with police officers because, like you said, to be a good cop, quote unquote, you have to not be a snitch. That's one of the criteria for being a quote unquote good cop in their settings. Our definition of a good cop is somebody who upholds peace, upholds the law, no matter what is happening. But their definition in too many circumstances of being a good cop is one that turns a blind eye towards their coworkers and peers committing acts that are illegal, unlawful, and in many senses like this one, unethical. That's the problem that I see, but I think it's still a valid point to be made that people who are peacemakers, police officers, many circumstances have a good mind and heart. The problem is they're in the situation in which they have to commit crimes. They have to break their own moral codes to keep their job. That's the issue. And I think it's as much of a problem with them as it is for us. Right? It's a good thing on both sides to promote active reform in the policing process. And we saw one of the witnesses at the Derek Chauvin case today was a firefighter, a law enforcement official who came out and she was talking about how she tried to fix the situation, but she was barred from helping them. And she herself called 911 on the scene. And she was asked by the defense attorney, what would you do if bystanders were trying to, you know, barrage and break in upon your situation, your firefighting endeavor as you were firefighting and doing your job? And she said, it wouldn't be a question because I would be doing my job accurately, ethically, and by my standards. This guy was breaking the code and the oath that we take as peacekeepers, essentially. He was breaking it. And so I wouldn't be scared because I wasn't breaking anything. He was breaking it. And so I think there are people who believe in the validity, the weight of the law, the weight of our ethical codes in the law system. I think they're not given enough credit. And I think they should be allowed to practice what they preach, what they believe in, without being, you know, constricted upon by their fellow coworkers. Because right now, once again, the good cop argument, it takes breaking the law, breaking your moral code to be a good cop. And that is simply not okay in any situation, any society as a whole. And it breaks my heart because in this trial, if in the extenuating circumstance that Derek Chauvin is found not guilty of whatever he's being charged for, it would completely tear every single thing that I have known, which is what happened with Breonna Taylor. The fact that we have video evidence
and of Trayvon Martin.
And Trayvon Martin.
Yeah,
and
let's go with all
many
of them.
Other cases. Yeah. And yeah. It's 9 minutes and 20 seconds of footage by bystanders and people watching of a man getting kneeled on at a scene. Well, like, how much more do you need? And I think that if he is somehow found not guilty, it is going to be a representation of what we've talked about before, qualified immunities. If a normal citizen was found kneeling on a man's head for 9 minutes and 20 seconds, no matter what they had in their body, no matter what fentanyl they had in their body, they would be charged with a crime.
Yep.
If this peacekeeper is not charged with a crime because he was simply following protocol, that is the very definition of qualified immunities.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and then the other thing was one of the bystanders, actually one of the most vocal bystanders that we hear in the video, like literally saying, like, you're choking him. We go on to find out is a martial arts instructor. I don't know if you saw that, who specializes in literally like knowing this stuff. Like, so while he was, yes, a lay witness, you know, a witness of the eye that saw what, you know, has an encounter, saw what happened, you know, has a firsthand encounter for this case, he is also, and he was being treated as though he was an expert witness because this was an area of expertise for him. So he knew what Derek Chauvin was doing. He knew it. He said it there himself. I'm a martial arts instructor. I knew what he was doing. He was killing him. We all knew it. I'm not a martial arts instructor. I watched the video. I saw it. I have eyes. And you know, you're talking about this good cop argument. And I always talk about my instances with the police. And you know, it literally took me till this conversation to remember this. I talk about, you know, an instance where I saw a family member arrested in front of me by 4 or 5 police officers. I talk about it multiple times. I've talked about it in the past. And one thing that I never bring up, because this event is so scarring and just like, you know, the fact, I remember, you know, the part that scarred me. You know, when I was outside, I remember it was raining after this incident happened and I saw this person arrested and taken away. A police officer, one of the police officers that was watching these four other, it was 5 police officers in total, watching these 4 other police officers tackle and arrest my family member, comes up to me and says, hey, buddy, you know, it's going to be okay. I was 5 at the time. Hey, you know, buddy, it's going to be okay. Go inside. It was raining. I was crying. It was raining outside. He goes, you know, it's going to be okay. Go inside. I always thought of that guy as a good cop. But why didn't he stop the police brutality that was happening there? Why didn't he stop the overreacting, the overuse of force? You know, he's a good person. He's a good guy. But he's not a good cop. He's a bad police officer. And there is no such thing as a good cop in this system. There is not. And I'm speaking about it from firsthand experience. And the thing is, in their first 5 years, in their first 2 years, in their first 3 years, sure, there can be plenty of good cops that might report instances that they feel are wrong. But eventually, they either A, quit, B, are fired, or C, conform. And become police officers that don't report the cases.
Here's what I think.
And yeah.
To kind of give a little bit more clarity, our definition of a good cop is by their own definition a bad cop.
Exactly.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
For them, a good cop is different than our definition of a good cop. For them, a quote unquote good cop, as I was referring to it, is somebody who breaks their ethical codes to support their fellow co-workers and the idea of excessive force.
Yeah,
that's the point that I was trying to make.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, one statistic that I'm sure like literally every cop that has ever met me hates for like me bringing up, is like the 40% statistic. And you might know what I'm talking about. For those that don't know, 40% of cops are domestic abusers. You know, the study has shown that 40% of cops are domestic abusers. And I don't think that 40% of hired police officers are domestic abusers. I think that they're put in an occupation where their training is literally get them to comply. They're seen as an authority figure. And one thing, one video that I love, I absolutely love this video, is this guy gets pulled over or something. And I think that, like, I can't remember the officer's name, but it's a female officer. He's like, "Hello, Mrs. Rodriguez." And she's like, "That's Officer Rodriguez to you." And he goes, "Hello, public servant Rodriguez." And it's like the reminder that these people forget that, like, we pay them, you know? Like, hey, I pay your salary. Like, you can have a certain level of respect because I think every individual should be treated with respect. And I think that respect can be equally lost among all individuals. That's the same reason that I don't respect veterans just because they're veterans. Like, you know, if you're a good guy and you're a veteran, cool. But just because you're a veteran doesn't mean that I'm instantly going to be like, oh, like please accept me in your like greatness. Like, thank you for going to Operation Desert Storm where only 136 veterans died. Like, oh my God, you're so great. Thank you for committing a bunch of war atrocities in Operation Desert Storm. Like, no, or Vietnam. Vietnam's also a great one. Like, oh, thank you for going to Vietnam and stopping the spread of communism unsuccessfully. It's the same thing with police officers. You know, like, your respect is earned by what you do. And I think that if Derek Chauvin is acquitted, there's a saying that, like, you know, if the system didn't take care of him, the system will take care of him. And I, for his safety, I hope, and not just for his safety, because he deserves it. Obviously, despite my views, I don't think anyone should get the death penalty or life in prison for that matter. And I don't think that that's different for Derek Chauvin. I think that he should be reformed and be taught what he did was wrong, and that he should have an understanding of that, and that if he is seen as a eligible candidate to reenter society, that he should. But beyond the point, I think that for his safety in our current system, and because it's what he deserves under our current set of laws and punishments, he should get at least life in prison. And if he doesn't, then he's getting the death penalty. And you know, if he's acquitted, it's not a innocent plea. Like, it's not you're innocent. It's not like a you're not guilty. It's a go survive. Like, figure out a way. He's going into protective custody because he will not make it out of that courtroom if he is found innocent.
He won't.
Yeah.
And you talk about how there was
Or not
a high
guilty.
school, I believe, a high school teacher who was outside of the place in which he was being, held to a trial. And she chained herself to the gates for 24 hours up till Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. today. And she had just stood there with no water, no food, had been protesting the fact that this man could potentially be acquitted for a crime that he committed and was caught on video having committed. And she said she would give her post to somebody else, another protester, to sit there for 24 hours once again at 7 o'clock p.m. today. It shows how people are willing and able to stretch their own boundaries to promote the idea of acceptance. She shouldn't have to be waiting for 24 hours to bring about change. It should have came when a man was killed for, what was kneeled on for 9 minutes now and 20 seconds. It should have came then. It does not take extra people risking their lives, risking their livelihoods. It shouldn't take that. It should take the simple situation that we have currently. We shouldn't have gridlock over common human rights. I want to end here. I want to end by talking about, we have a discussion about police officers. There was a story I read a couple of weeks ago about two police officers who had attended, two white police officers who attended a BLM rally with a couple of black protesters, had held up signs, had stood there and talked to them. And the woman who had stood next to them for the whole time realized a couple of months later that these same police officers had went to the Capitol and committed insurrection. There's two situations that are wrong with what happened. Number one, people who purportedly were supporters of Black Lives Matter were also supporting the idea of a stolen election, which is complete, fraudulent, and likely supporting voter suppression. That's the first thing that's wrong with it. The second thing that's wrong with it is people who have been purported or took an oath to protect the rule of law and protect our legal system were breaking laws, entering the Capitol, and trespassing upon a government institution. They could be held as criminals in a court of law. And they're the people that are out there defending us against so-called criminals.
Yeah.
How just, it's a huge dichotomy between what we think of police officers as and what they actually are. You defend the law, but you still go out and you break the law to support an idea that's completely false and has no evidence behind it. How more wrong could that be?
Yeah.
They talk about, they told the woman over text because she reached out to him on social media. They said, I defend your right to free speech and I go out and I have my own right to free speech and I defend these things. But it's like when you defend the idea of a stolen election, you're also in by effect defending voter suppression because what does that mean? You also believe that early voting should be constricted upon. That's what you believe. And that's voter suppression. That's suppression against minorities. It's all these things that come back to one idea. Racism.
Yeah.
The same idea, but it continues to bleed through what these actions and events are perpetrating.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's a long, you know, set of situations that we've been mentioning today. We talked about Derek Chauvin. We talked about Lil Nas X. We talked about so many things. COVID-19. It was a jam-packed episode. I like that we're having these jam-packed episodes because I'm glad to be back on the podcast. Glad to be talking about these things and doing it with my best friend, Damien.
Yeah, there you go. Happy to be here too, man. And you know, I thought you did a little purposeful like ending there because you said it keeps bleeding through and we started with Lil Nas X and the little blood shoes. We're going to pretend like that was on purpose. We're just going to go with it.
It was, don't worry.
There you go. There you go. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely love being here too. And you were talking about voter suppression, man. We need to have a whole hour conversation about what our governor did behind closed doors a couple days ago and how me and you are going to go hand out water to watch him lose because allegedly it's a voter crime or it's a crime now to
I'll
give
hand out water. I'll hand out Cokes. I'll hand out beer.
Yep,
I'll hand out everything, bro.
Yeah, we're going to. You bet we're going to. 2022, we're going to hand out. We're going to say, we're gonna tell our grandchildren we handed out water to watch Brian Kemp lose. So we were breaking the law to watch that man lose. But nonetheless, I enjoyed being here, and I'm gonna enjoy being here the next time we get to record. Hopefully soon, we're getting back on schedule, ladies and gentlemen. And we hope that you enjoyed being here and listening to this episode because we enjoyed having you. If you want to see anything else that we're doing behind the scenes, or if you want to get clips of this episode, if you're listening to this on audio, you can check out our TikTok, get some visuals, some short clips, some highlights from the podcast, some of our favorite moments, well edited, and you can engage with more people on there that might think like you. If you want to see the visual podcast because you're just watching this, you know, audio and you want to rewatch or watch some extended clips from other podcasts, go check out our YouTube channel. You can find that on our webpage at politatine.com. And if you want to see what we're up to on social media, you can check out both our Twitter and Instagram at Politatine Show. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of the Politatine Podcast. Goodbye. That concludes the hour segment of this podcast. To listen to or watch the remainder of this episode, head over to politatine.com and click the watch tab in the top right. Beyond that, thank you for listening to another episode of Politatine.